it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Woody, thank you so much. Time to bring in Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk, and part of what makes the National Football League so great is last night a lot of people turned on that game and said, oh my God, the Giants are going to get crushed. And all they do is go out and win by three scores and really let the Eagles have it. Boy, I tell you what, what'd you think about last night? And is the A.J. Brown pouting and comments starting to affect this team, or do they have bigger problems?
Well, Joe, let's broaden the lens a little bit, too. It's now four straight primetime games that have resulted in upsets, and four Super Bowl contenders have lost. Rams, wow. Bills, Chiefs, and now the Eagles. So we've had some entertaining big platform standalone games lately, and it just makes you wonder, where are the great teams? I think it's the Lions, and everybody else is still trying to figure it out. And the Eagles are now in that category firmly of team that's trying to figure it out. If you're an Eagles fan, this was the worst possible week. Setting aside what happened to the Phillies, you woke up Sunday morning, your team was 4-0. Your team had stolen from the Chiefs the find a way to win, no matter the circumstances vibe. Now they're 4-2. And they lost to a team that had lost eight straight games in the division. Mm. That was the second longest streak in franchise history for the Giants and the longest active streak in the NFL for futility in the same division. Brian Daboll was something like 5-16-1 in the division. So that was a huge, huge win for the Giants. And, you know, the A.J. Brown thing, because I think the spark for the current dysfunction was the tweet that he sent after the win over the Buccaneers, and then the aftermath of that with the Eagles circling the wagons and trying to act like everything's fine. They spend so much time trying to create the impression to the outside that everything's fine. I don't think they spend enough time trying to fix whatever's wrong.
Right.
And I thought they were getting back to what they needed to do. Coach Dungy was on with me yesterday, and he said, this is very simple. Our goal is to win football games. You know, when Dungy was the coach of the Colts, they had a bunch of great players on offense. And you never heard about any friction. One of the reasons was Peyton Manning would put his foot up your butt if you complained. And I think the Eagles don't have that in Jalen Hurts, and that's fine. Everybody leads differently. But A.J. Brown's frustrations bubbled over. There were some shots last night of him sitting on the bench with Devontae Smith. And, man, I would have loved to have been able to hear what they were saying to each other, because they had the demeanor of two guys who were like, let's get the hell out of here. So the whole thing is a mess now. But I think that A.J. Brown's actions are a symptom, not the disease. And I don't know what the disease is. Think about it this way, Joe. Nick Sirianni's an offensive coach. Why is it that every time they change offensive coordinators, everything changes? What happened to the guy who got the job as an offensive coordinator being the guy in charge of the offense? The coordinator shouldn't matter. Every year they have a different coordinator, and either it's a guy who's good enough that they lose him after a year because he becomes a head coach, or it's a guy who's bad enough that they fire him after 1 year. And Kevin Petullo is on track to be fired after 1 year.
Yeah, it's amazing. By the way, the other side of this, how good the two rookies were. Scataboo last night and Dart with the passion. What a great time to flip the quarterback and go with the rookie. His energy along with that running back. Mike, we haven't seen anything like that from two guys that come into a place like New York and just add it. Boy, you can just sense the whole team, even all those veterans, feed off those guys.
Last night was one of those nights where you go back to the 2025 draft and you start looking at where guys were taken and who was taken before them. Dart lasted until late in round one. Cam Scataboo was picked number 105. Oh. So those guys were there. Pretty much everyone had a shot at Dart. Everyone had multiple shots at Cam Scataboo. And, you know, there's just something for a team that hasn't done anything. Two playoff appearances, one and out. Well, not one and out. They did beat the Vikings in 2022. It felt like one and out because they got blown off the field by the Eagles in Philadelphia in the divisional round that year. But futility for the most part for the Giants since beating the Patriots in Super Bowl 46 to have a new vibe with new players that you can build around, to have a guy in Jackson Dart. It kind of reminds me of 2018 when we all realized, hey, Josh Allen can run the ball. We were so focused on completion percentage and is it the receiver's fault at Wyoming? Is it because he played at altitude and weather or whatever? This guy can run.
Yes, he can. Dart,
this guy can run. Now he's got to be a little careful. He can't go launching himself head first like Andre Waters when he's trying to get a first down. But they got something now. And they're 2-4, but there's a lot of football still to be played. There's going to be a, you know, I thought it was handful of great teams, handful of awful teams, everybody else in the middle, and we'll see who breaks in the direction of good as we get deeper into the season. That swath in the middle is getting bigger and bigger. I mean, it's basically Lions, everybody else, Titans, and Jets. I left the Dolphins out just, you know, I want everybody to have a good morning, but you can put the Dolphins down there too. But there's a wide swath in the middle of teams that could break one way or the other.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of that, all right, so the Dolphins, you can imagine it's been another rough week after the Panthers, after being up 17-0 against the Panthers and having a backup running back run like he's player of the week. He was that good. So now you play the Chargers, and they got, like, more injuries on their offensive line, Mike, than anybody. The backups are now injured. They got four or five guys besides their starting first-round pick offensive tackles. If there is a week to ever get healthy, you feel any better about the Dolphins' chances because of the injuries and the D-line and the front seven for the Miami Dolphins should be able to stop part of their running game?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that this is a great opportunity for the Dolphins. They're at home. I don't know what it's going to be tomorrow. I assume hot would be or Sunday.
Yes.
And the Chargers will be although I'm assuming they're going to pack the powder blues, not the dark blues, to show up for Miami to play that game. But the Chargers are a different team without Joe Alt. We saw it against the Giants. We saw it last week against Washington. Now, they were in a position to take control of that game, and they didn't, and Washington seized it. But they can't run the ball like they were.
Nope.
If they had a healthy offensive line and either Omarion Hampton or Najee Harris, they would just run the ball 50 times. It would look like Jim Harbaugh at Michigan, where they just ran and ran and ran. Remember that Penn State game? Just run it, run it, run it, run it. They'd run all over the Dolphins. So it gives the Dolphins an opening. And I actually think the Dolphins will cover the spread. I think it's too much to expect the Dolphins to win because the Chargers are kind of inching toward desperation. But one thing I've learned the past couple of weeks from the Ravens, from the Eagles, desperation doesn't mean anything.
No.
If you've got flaws, no amount of desperation is going to cover those flaws up.
Right. Doesn't matter what kind of pep talk you're given or players-only meetings and all the other things that we talk so much about. I got to ask you, we had a weird one going back to the head coach for the Cardinals, Jonathan Gannon, going after a player who, by the way, I get that he was upset. I know everybody had a little different take on the way everything. He apologized. He obviously got fined a lot of money. The head coach did. What was your take on it? I am always shocked when a guy slows down and then drops the ball before he gets to the end zone. We've had it happen twice this year.
I mean, it's always inexcusable. And it was beyond inexcusable for it to happen 1 week after A.D. Mitchell of the Colts did the same thing. Because that's the thing that leads the players meeting with the coach, the first one that occurs after the week four games. And Devin McCourty, he was hilarious the way he shared the manner in which Bill Belichick would have played that, the things Bill Belichick would have said. He glossed over the profanity, but every coach had an obligation following the Colts play to underscore in no uncertain terms the importance of securing the ball through the back of the end zone.
Right.
And at a minimum through the front of the end zone. So that was one of those moments. And it's not like the guy did it on purpose. It wasn't sabotage.
No.
It was just foolishness. And that cost him the game. After the game, Jonathan Gannon, the coach of the Cardinals, said, "It's never about one play." Oh, yes, it is. When you would have been up 28-6 with 12 minutes left against the worst team in football, yes, it is about one play, because that opened the door for the Titans to go the other way, score a touchdown. They had that weird play with the interception, and the ball's out and gets kicked into the end zone by the Cardinals, and the Titans recovered for a touchdown. The next thing you know, they win the game. So it was about one play. But for Gannon, look, I mean, hey, Joe, I'm sure that you played football at a time when coaches were laying hands and or feet on players.
That's correct.
I mean, I've had flashbacks to 50 years ago. When I played grade school football at a Catholic school in Wheeling, West Virginia, if you were standing around, you got a foot in your ass, literally, from the coach. and I still think about that. And it's one of the reasons why I've got this illness where I never stop. I mean, I guess it's like the best kind of PTSD you can have, because it's pushed me toward having a moderate degree of success in my life. But I still think of it 50 years later. You can't lay hands on players. And the
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The angle that we saw wasn't ideal because it was the back of DeMarcado and the teammate that was consoling him. But you could see from the movement of the bodies that Gannon made contact with him at least twice from the front and then hit his arm as he was walking away. And, you know, we could have had a Latrell Sprewell incident because there's certain guys you mess with like that.
Going back at
it back to you 10 times worse. But I think it was the right outcome. $100,000 fine imposed by the team. If the team hadn't done it, the league would have done something. Something needed to be done. There's a line you can't cross. I know it's a physical sport that's premised on contact, but there's a point where the contact ends, and it ends when you cross the white line.
Right.
That's when the switch is off, and the guys who aren't playing in the game are the last ones that should be initiating contact.
So Don Shula never laid a hand. He was one of the toughest mofos when the guy drafted me. And Mike, I got to tell you, I still think, and I say this all the time with the Dolphin teams, have a team meeting, turn on the projector, and show it over and over again in front of all the guys on the team. Like, we can't do this. Whatever. Sarcasm. Don't say a word. Just run it back and forth. It was the most humiliating thing to have a drop in a crucial situation or whiff on a block and have the coach in a team meeting with all the players that I played with see it. It was humiliating. It was the worst. It was like, I'd rather got hit. I'd rather got spanked by my father with my pants down, I swear, than go through something like that. That's all I could think of. But
hey, you know what Tony Dungy said on the issue? He said, and he put it in very simple terms, because obviously you're not going to see Tony Dungy lay hands on a player. But you know what he would have done? He would have cut him. He would have gone to him and he said, you knew what your job was. You failed to do it. You can no longer be part of this team.
Yeah. The only thing I'd say back to that, if you're too good a player and too important to the team, or we owe you too much money, that's just not going to happen.
That's the problem. That's the problem. It's the old Jimmy Johnson line about the guy
that's
for falling asleep during a meeting. What do you do if Troy Aikman falls asleep? I give him a pillow.
Make sure, make sure Michael Irvin, like, Mike, you can go in now.
That's the problem with double standards, because certain guys think they can get away with it. Now, I don't know where DeMarcado falls, but with Trey Benson hurt and James Conner out for the year, you're cutting off your nose to spite your face if you cut Amari DeMarcado.
Yeah, no question. By the way, all the teams, all the running backs going down. Anyway, hey, I got to ask you about this. And this Belichick thing, first of all, because we still have people thinking Belichick's going to be the next coach down here, and there is no shot of that ever happening the way Don Shula felt about Bill Belichick. There is nobody in the organization that'd be foolish enough to bring him. But I do believe he's a one and done. And I didn't believe it before. But now that I find out he took a little trip on the bye week with Jordan Hudson to get away, and I'm like, nobody does that in college football. You're recruiting. You're making sure your team's you don't lose your team. You're working on things. You're calling parents. And Bill's just out doing his own thing, chasing that little – making sure the little guy still works and chasing that 24-year-old around, Mike.
Well, you know – Belichick's an interesting case study because the success in New England eventually created a degree of arrogance that became hubris, that became delusion. And somebody was telling me the other day, because this whole thing he has with the Patriots now, like, why wasn't it there when they fired him?
Yeah.
You know, the joint press conference with Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick, and, you know, he's in a suit and he's smiling the best that Bill Belichick can ever smile. Well, he thought he was going to land somewhere else as an NFL head coach.
He did.
He thought he was going to end up with a better team than the New England Patriots were as he was being ushered out the door in New England. And it's all kind of blown up in his face, and he's got no one around him to speak hard truths. He's got no one around him to tell him, you probably shouldn't do that. You know, you probably shouldn't do that interview with that shirt with the hole in the neck. You probably, you know, maybe we should be aiming a little higher in our recruits. So I think the most telling thing that I saw this week, and there were some incredible reports out there about the dysfunction within the program, but I think it was Bruce Feldman who had a report with an unnamed coach from one of the Group of Five conferences, Sun Belt, et cetera, the cut below the Power Four. And he said, you know, during recruiting in the portal, we kept finding ourselves pitted against North Carolina for the same guys. And anytime I've got one of these Power Four schools and we're trying to get the same guys, I say, man, that team's going to suck. And that's, wow, that's the bottom line at, yeah, the college level. If your players aren't good enough, you could be the greatest coach of all time.
That's true.
And if your players aren't good enough, it does not matter. Great game plan. We don't have the players to execute it. Great adjustments. We don't have the players to execute them. That's the problem.
Hey, and I just leave you with this. Michael Lombardi looks like a complete ass clown. Seriously, I know part of his job is that he has just lost everything in the name of Bill Belichick. Whatever credibility he had, in my opinion, it's
well,
terrible.
Well, and hey, look, and I want to choose my words somewhat carefully. You know people around the league. You know what people around the league think of Lombardi. You know, I mean, what's he ever really done? What's he ever done? And what does he ever do other than quote other people? Like, all the guy does is find quotes and repeat them. Has he ever had an original thought in his life? And he quotes Bill Walsh. Bill Walsh despised him.
I think you're going to say he learned from Al Davis.
Parcells hates him. Parcells like, what's this guy get together? I don't quote me. So And they had this great plan. And the new plan is they're going to recruit upwards of 40 freshmen. Good luck getting those guys to sign after what you're doing this year. And you brought in 70 new guys this year.
Right.
So this, you can't build a program for, you know, with guys you bring in as freshmen and keep them for 4 or 5 years, because the best ones are going to go somewhere else and make more money.
Said it this morning. Same thing. The best players are out of there. They're going to build it up and they are gone for more money going somewhere else.
Hey, good luck keeping anybody. You think anybody there who is remotely talented, assuming they have anyone, do you think that guy's going to be back next year, or do you think he's going to get the hell out of here?
Get the hell out of there, man, in a heartbeat.
I don't know if he's going to make it for the end of the season. There was a point this week where I thought it was going to end before their next game, Friday the 17th at Cal. It looks like it's settled down, but I feel like there's a lot of posturing now as to how much money is going to change hands when he goes.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's part of the game right now. How much of the buyout does he get? Would he be in a position? There was a report the other day that maybe he'd write the $1 million check to walk away. I can't imagine him doing that when they owe him $20 million and they're going to want him gone even worse than he's going to want to be gone. It just feels like the, you know, the planes are lining up for their final approach to the runway. And it can change if they would go out there and win at Cal, but they're 13.5-point underdogs.
Yeah.
So they just got to win a game. And if this continues, it's not sustainable.
Yeah.
Regardless of beyond this year, it's not sustainable through the end of this year.
I agree. I can't wait for all the stories going to come out after that little experience. Boy, that's going to be unbelievable. Mike, thank you so much, man. Really appreciate you coming on. Thanks.
See you, Joe.
All right. Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.